Before long, we'll be where it would have taken mankind millions of years of learning to reach.
And what will Mitchell learn on getting there? Will he know what to do with his power?
That's the big agenda here, is undermining the whole idea of journalism, and that's the real thing to worry about.
The good old Ministry of Truth has another outlet.
Too often, broadcast radio insults your intelligence instead of respecting it, improving it, challenging it. But not here. Where knowledge is power, this is Powerful Radio. This is 30 minutes of information and inspiration. This is the Ministry of Truth. Hello and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepanchik. On today's show, we'll speak with Chicago journalist Jessica Popovac to discuss the case of Chicago prisoner Michael Tillman, who was freed from jail after 23 years, and the role that independent media helped play in his release. The following interview with Jessica Popovac was recorded on Friday, January 29th, 2010. We are joined by Jessica Popovac. Jessica Popovac is a Chicago-based freelance reporter and current Soros Justice Media Fellow. He was going to talk with us about a recent story that's garnered major headlines in the Chicago media. By way of disclosure, I should mention that Jessica and I have been collaborators in a lot of various media in the Chicago area, including Third Coast Press and others. Jessica, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mitchell. Thanks for having me here.
I'd like to begin by talking about an article that I'll actually quote. I usually don't do this, but I'll quote a corporate news outlet, NBC Chicago, for a headline that they had published on January 15th. Nearly 24 years after he was wrongfully convicted of murder, Michael Tillman is free and exonerated. Tillman served more than two decades in prison for the murder of Betty Howard, a 42-year-old mail clerk whose body was found in the building where Tillman was living. He was 20 years old at the time. His conviction was based on a confession which he has always contended was coerced through torture by officers working under Chicago Police Commander John Burge. Burge is set for a federal trial for perjury and obstruction of justice relating to his time as commander during the 1970s and 80s. The reason we're talking to you about this is that you helped to break the story of Michael Tillman. Mm-hmm. Just to start off, let's talk a little bit about Michael Tillman. We've got a little bit of background now, but flesh out a little bit more of the details of who Michael Tillman was and why he was in jail for so long.
Well, Michael Tillman, in 1986, Michael Tillman was a 21-year-old father of two and a janitor or a groundskeeper for an apartment building on the south side of Chicago. The murder of Betty Howard took place in that building, and police immediately saw him as a suspect, brought him in for questioning, and what ensued was 3 days of what Tillman describes as a whole battery of torture techniques. He was beaten, he was brought out to the to some railroad tracks where police held a gun to his head in a mock execution. They kicked him until he threw up in the stomach. They kicked him in the stomach until he threw up. They held his head back and squirted 7-Up up his nose in a crude form of what we would now call waterboarding. And this went on for 3 days, during which he was not allowed to speak to a member of his family or an attorney. Shortly after, during these 3 days of torture, eventually Tillman said, okay, fine, I'll confess to this crime. All along they were saying, we know you did it, we know you killed that woman, and it was Betty Howard, who was 42 at the time. She was a single mother, and it was a horrible murder. Her young son was locked in the bathroom while this all took place, and when family members found her body, the son was still in the bathroom the next day. And the Chicago Police Department, we can assume, just wanted to shut the case. They wanted to have the case closed and wanted to move on and feel that they had really done their job there. Unfortunately, for Michael and for them, about a month later, there was a two men were chased by Chicago police officers in what officers identified to be Betty Howard's vehicle that was taken from the scene of the crime. They pulled the men over and found a knife used in the murder in the car. Those men led them to another suspect, a man by the name of Clarence Trotter, who also was found to have a number of Miss Howard's personal items in his home, some of her jewelry, her shoe, and the gun that was used to end her life. Mm-hmm. Clarence Trotter had a number of... His fingerprints were on a Coke can at the scene of the crime. There were a number of things that linked him to Betty Howard's murder. But nonetheless, since they had already gotten this so-called confession from Tillman, Tillman was tried and found guilty in a separate trial of rape, kidnap, and murder, and given a life sentence.
What year did all this take place?
This all took place in 1986.
Okay.
Allegedly, Clarence Trotter was also beaten into confessing. Apparently, the right arm didn't know what the left arm was doing.
Beaten by the police. Uh-huh. By another police contingent that apparently was...
No, by the same group.
Okay.
It was, you know, a lot of detectives working under John Burge in Area 2 at that time.
Right.
Detective Bafo Dignan Ukitis. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that name correctly, but... Clarence Trotter also, they tried to link Clarence Trotter to Michael Tillman repeatedly, mm-hmm. showed him pictures of Tillman and a man named by the name of Michael Bell, who they also tried to, or I'm sorry, Stephen Bell, who they also tried to link to Betty Howard's murder along with Tillman. Stephen Bell at the time was painting some of the vacant apartment buildings or apartments with Michael Tillman. So they tried to link these two different groups of men, and Trotter wasn't having it. Trotter said, "I don't know those men. I didn't, you know, I don't know them," but he did confess to the murder. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, Michael Tillman was found guilty. Stephen Bell was acquitted because it turned out that he was actually working another job at Burger King during the time that the murder took place. So there was no way that it would have been possible for him to be involved. Mm-hmm. Clarence Trotter, in a separate trial a couple months later, was also found guilty and also given a life sentence. Michael Tillman, like I said, he had two small children at the time when he went to jail. He, over the course of the years, his family lost touch with his children, and, you know, they moved on. Their mother brought them to Wisconsin, where they're believed to be living now. He suffered a great loss. I mean, 23 and a half years of his life behind bars because of this practice of torture that took place and that we now know to have been systemic in the Area 3 headquarters during that time.
How did you, but I guess your role in all of this is that you had, well, written an article in 2008 about Michael Tillman's story. So let's talk about your involvement with this. How did you first hear about this? Why did you get involved? And what did you do?
Sorry, I should have said Area 2 before.
That's fine.
Okay, so Area 2 headquarters. Okay. My involvement, I came across this case when I was just walking downtown one day for something completely unrelated, and there was a demonstration. The Coalition to End the Death Penalty, mm-hmm. led by Julian Bell, was downtown demonstrating in front of Attorney General Lisa Madigan's office. Apparently, a number of these cases of alleged torture victims in the 70s and 80s. They're almost entirely African-American men on the south side of Chicago who alleged to have been tortured into confessing to crimes that they may or may not have committed. There was a demonstration outside of Lisa Madigan's office, and I stopped and listened for a while, and I said, you know, I would really love to do... I'm a freelance reporter, so I write for a number of different publications, and I thought, you know, I could probably find a home for this story somewhere, that just the fact that these cases are still sitting there, that there still are, they estimate at least 27 men who have who alleged to have been tortured in a way that matches the pattern of abuse that's been identified by the Chicago Police Department's own Office of Professional Standards. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they were demanding that Lisa Madigan revisit these cases, reopen these cases, and give these men the fair trials that they never got without evidence that was tortured out of them, without confessions that were tortured out of them. So I, you know, I began to look into these men's cases, and look into the issue and try to understand the legalities of it, because it's passed through so many different hands because of conflict of interest or because of statute of limitations. And, I tried to just get my head around what was actually happening and what they were actually out there demanding. And, I started to look into this particular case because, and it was an interesting kind of stroke of luck because I asked to speak with a family member, of one of the men who alleged to have been tortured, who's still incarcerated. And they usually send people to one particular woman, but she was out of town. So they sent me to Jean Tillman, Michael's mother, mm-hmm. who doesn't typically talk to the press. Michael's case hadn't gotten any press attention previously. And I began to look, I sat and listened to this woman's story for about an hour one afternoon, and I hung up the phone with her, and I thought, that poor woman, she's so convinced that her son is innocent, and she's so alone. You know, in the time that Michael has been incarcerated, he's lost siblings, cousins, a lot of, you know, close members of his family, and so has she. And you know, she's not a woman of you know, extreme means. She doesn't have the money to go down and visit him regularly. And I thought, I'm going to look into this more. And I went back and dug up everything I could about his case. I got a hold of the transcripts from the trial, from his original trial, and started, you know, just rifling through those, reading all of the closing arguments, reading the testimonies of the officers, reading Michael's testimony, the testimony of his girlfriend at the time, who he was living with. And I realized, I pieced together the story that way and realized they didn't have a shred of physical evidence linking this guy to this murder. All they had was this so-called confession.
By Michael Tillman.
Mm-hmm. And then I started to look into Clarence Trotter's case and realized what an overwhelming amount of evidence they had against him. Mm-hmm. And what, and the fact that he, you know, still maintains that Michael Tillman had nothing to do with this. He doesn't say that he's guilty. Mm-hmm. The evidence says that he's guilty, and right. The courts said that he's guilty. Mm-hmm. But he says that man did not do it. That man should not be behind bars.
Michael Tillman should,
Clarence Trotter says that Michael Tillman should not be behind bars. Mm-hmm. So the more and more I researched the story, and I, you know, pitched it to Alternet, and they were on board right away. And I, at first, you know, I pitched them the story of doing a story just about, in general, that there are these men out there who have never gotten fair trials, and whether or not they're guilty, they're deserved to fair trials that does not use evidence tortured against them. Mm-hmm. To determine their guilt or innocence. Mm-hmm. Alternet was, you know, Alternet is a progressive and independent news service. They do a lot of quelling of what's out there and aggregating other content, but they also do a lot of really great original content with their own staff and freelancers that they hire. And I pitched this story to them, and they were excited about it. They wanted to do a story about the Burge cases, the kind of forgotten Burge cases. It's interesting because Burge has been in the news so much lately because his trial is coming up. And mm-hmm. while, you know, I think that the city needs to have him be held accountable for his actions, and the police department and people who rely on the police department need to know that this cannot, that there has to be some sort of accountability when these acts occur, that this isn't just business as usual. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing. At the same time, I still find it really disturbing that so many, you know, poor black men from the South Side have gotten lost in all of the media blitz over the torture scandals. There's still so many cases that need to be reopened and revisited.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote this story. I put together Michael's case and Clarence Trotter's case, and I wrote a story for Alternet that was published in July of 2008. And a few months later, someone from the People's Law Office, which is a progressive law office, they were actually formed in the wake of Fred Hampton's murder, I believe,
mm-hmm.
or maybe shortly beforehand, to defend him against just antagonism from, I don't know if it was the FBI or the police at that point, but so they have a history of kind of going up against the Chicago Police Department, and they also have a long history of representing Burge torture victims. And they, you know, once I wrote this story, it, you know, unbeknownst to me, it started being forwarded. I guess you never know, once you write something and send it out into the ether, you know, you never know where it's going to land. But it was sent around to a lot of legal listservs, a lot of, I think, the National Lawyers Guild sent it out. And I have a friend who works in New York with the Center for Constitutional Rights, and she forwarded it to me and said that it was passed around her workplace and on some listservs that she's on. And so it got some traction, and the people over at the People's Law Office who were aware of his case and who had looked into his case before, there's actually a kind of network of lawyers, including the people at the MacArthur Justice Center, Northwestern, and other legal teams in Chicago who, you know, have made it their mission to kind of divide up these Burge torture cases and take them on pro bono and do their best with them. They all seem to think that somebody else had the case. It had passed from one hand, you know, from one team to another team to another team, and then somebody decided, oh, we don't have the resources to do this right now, and he just kind of fell through the cracks. So after I wrote the story, that group of lawyers, one of them gave me a call and asked some questions about, you know, the information that was in the article, and whether or not, if it, you know, does he really not have legal representation right now? And they shortly thereafter took on the case.
How much time had elapsed between the article's publication and when you got contacted by the People's Law Office for following up on this?
I don't remember exactly, but I feel like it was just a few months.
Okay.
I think that Ben Elson's the name of the man at the People's Law Office who had started looking into the case. I think, from what I've heard, he actually went down and met with Michael as well, and kind of started drumming up support there at the People's Law Office to take the case on.
So now the People's Law Office has run with the ball, and so what happens with them?
They filed a post-conviction petition in the summer of 2009. I want to say it was in June. And these things are, you know, they're very... it's a very small percentage of post-conviction petitions that actually get approved and that instigate a new trial.
Mm-hmm.
So when they did it, you know, I went and covered that they had filed it. I just kind of blogged about it, and it was covered in the mainstream press. The Chicago Tribune and the Sun-Times showed up to their press conference, and I think the Defender as well. But still, the lawyers told me, you know, don't get too. I was excited to see something that I had worked so hard on actually have an effect.
But nonetheless, you know? And, you're still.
But
advised.
Nonetheless, they were. They yeah. said, don't get your hopes up. Mm-hmm, like this mm-hmm. doesn't mean that anything's gonna happen beyond this.
Right.
You know, it's a rare case when it does.
But apparently, something did.
But something did. Later in December, I got a phone call. From one of the lawyers telling me that, you know, the special prosecutor who was assigned to look into this case, because that's another story, mm-hmm. but the special prosecutor's office had basically looked at all of the evidence, against Michael Tillman, or lack thereof, and had said, and this is what happened in the courtroom on January 15th, or I'm sorry, it was January 14th. They said, basically, the judge decided to throw out the original charges against Michael Tillman, and the special prosecutor's office said, we're not going to bring new charges. We don't have a modicum of evidence against this man that would warrant us bringing new charges and starting a new case against him. And so he was effectively free to go.
And I guess the reason I find this story so exciting is that it, even though as rare as it is, it's nonetheless an inspiration that one person with a lot of energy and a lot of effort can nonetheless take an injustice and help to right some wrong, even well after the fact. And also kind of illustrates the kind of, well, both power and potential regarding independent media initiatives. Like mm-hmm. there was this that Alternet and you have been involved mm-hmm. with, but also the fact that it can maybe serve as an example for the kind of journalism that we should be seeing more of mm-hmm. to help to, fight for the common man, right wrongs wherever they lie, and try to make the world a better place rather than just trying to be a mouthpiece to people in power.
Right. And unfortunately, you know, if you look at the amount of time I spent on that story and what I was actually paid for it, mm-hmm. unfortunately, doing that kind of journalism isn't something you could do full-time sustainably.
Right.
And that speaks to a need for valuing investigative journalism a lot more, not only in the mainstream media, but also in the alternative press and in the more progressive media outlets. And that can't happen unless they have the funds right. to support it. Another outlet I used to work for a lot in these times had to lay off most of their staff and really cut down to a bare bones operation over the summer. And Alternet right now is still alive and kicking, but they're struggling financially. Right. And they just had a big donation drive, and so it's important that people support these types of outlets so that we maintain the spaces where cases like this are looked into. And I mean, I was very much supported and encouraged to work on this story from the editors at Alternet, and that was key. But also, I want to say that I did do this research, on my own, and it did take me a couple months to put all the pieces together and go back and verify everything, and double check. But it wasn't just me who who did this for Michael Tillman. Mm-hmm. First of all, it was the organizing of the Coalition to End the Death Penalty that brought my attention to it, and their, just religious dedication to all of the torture victims in Illinois. I mean, they're just very dependably out there holding Lisa Madigan and other people accountable for not giving these men their day in court. Mm-hmm. And then also, the people at the People's Law Office really did a lot of hard work on this and many other Burge torture cases. And there's a lot more to be done, unfortunately, but hopefully this will be, just another story of what's possible if people are able to take the time and put forth the effort and make things happen.
In the maybe 2 or 3 minutes we have remaining, and this is a really large topic I'm going to be opening here, but I'd like to at least hear a comment or two about it in the time we have remaining. You were able to find this kind of diamond in the rough, not only regarding a story, but also a wrong that was able to be righted. People in power might claim this as being just a single bad apple or a few bad apples. Mm. And yet, nonetheless, some others may argue that you've got the entire barrel of apples might be rotten, or rotten to the core. So there's obviously an issue here where not only do independent media resources need to be sustained and funded and supported, but also there's a lot of more work that can be done, not just with the these Burge torture cases that we've been talking about, but also regarding other systemic issues. Can you comment on that?
Do you mean with the Chicago Police Department?
Sure.
I think that there is a crisis of credibility within the Chicago Police Department, and I think it affects the faith that many ordinary citizens have in the police department. And this Burge scandal is one part of that, but it's a significant part of that. And I think that these issues need to not be downplayed or swept under the rug. And even, you know, allegations this week of police brutality or abuse or, I mean, I think we have a lot of really wonderful police officers in the city who do their jobs and do them well. And the ones who don't need to be held accountable and gotten rid of. And people need to see it. People need to know that it's happening. We need to be allowed to report on that. We need to be allowed to speak to these people and find out the stories. And there's within the entire city of Chicago, there's such a premium is placed on secrecy and not talking to the press and not giving them the information that they request and, you know, putting them off for weeks and weeks. And I think that the entire city could work a lot better, that there could be a lot more public faith in our public officials if that air of secrecy and of, you know, wanting to, and that reluctance to actually call a spade a spade and clean up shop would be changed.
We've been speaking with Jessica Popovac. She is a Chicago-based freelance reporter and current Soros Justice Media Fellow. We've been talking about a case of the story of Michael Tillman, which she helped to highlight and played a role in his ultimate reversal of his conviction. Jessica, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Mitchell.
That was an interview with Jessica Popovac, recorded on January 29th, 2010. To read the article that Jessica Popovac wrote, which played a role in freeing Michael Tillman, go online to alternet.org. That's alternet.org.
Listen to all past episodes of The Ministry of Truth online at www.szcz.org. That concludes this episode of The Ministry of Truth. Special thanks to Mario and the staff of WHPK Radio in Chicago. Thank you for listening.